All right. I want to end with seven evidences against fraudulent changes in the books. Seven evidences against fraudulent changes. Number one, remember, she was a prophet. We already looked at the Fanny Bolton incident. But do you know what Mrs. White's shortest vision was? One day, there at Elmshaven, a young girl who was working in her home stole a hairnet. Now, why would somebody do that? I don't know. Steal a hairnet from a prophet. And Mrs. White began to question, and of course, nobody confessed. And then Mrs. White had a vision, and she was shown what the girl had done. And furthermore, you know what the girl did? She burned it up in a lamp flame to destroy the evidence on top of it all. Now, friend, if the Lord would reveal to Mrs. White about a tiny hairnet, do we really believe that he wouldn't reveal to the prophet about fraudulent changes being made to her books? By the way, in the case of Fanny Bolton, Mrs. White stated exactly what her duty was when someone attempted to make changes or claimed to make changes. Let's read it. I have very much more light on the Old and New Testament scriptures, which I shall present to our people, if my way is not blocked by such influences as the influence exerted by Fanny Bolton. Now look at this. Such a work as hers. What work is that? The work to attempt to make changes and claim to have made changes. Such a work as hers calls for my pen and voice to contradict her statements. Do you understand what Mrs. White is saying? That if that were to happen, her duty is to proclaim it. Her duty is to let everybody know this has happened. Not just that it happens and the poor prophet doesn't even know what's happening to her writings. No, no. It's revealed to her and duty. She's duty bound. It calls for her pen and voice to contradict these statements. Evidence number two. Evidence number two is what the supposed changers left behind. What do I mean? Friends, there is so much readily available to every Seventh-day Adventist through the Testimonies for the Church volumes about how we should conduct Sabbath worship, counsel on how our ministers should work, counsel on the use of medicinal drugs, for example, counsels on health, on diet, counsels on where we should live, counsels on how we should run our schools. Why would these supposed changers leave all those things there that are such an incredible indictment against us? Counsel that we're not following. Friends, the testimony of what these supposed changers would have left behind is enough to refute the argument all by itself. Anybody read parts of Testimonies Volume 5 lately? That is strong stuff. Why would these supposed changers leave Testimonies Volume 5? It's interesting to me that some people actually point to Testimonies Volume 5. And let me share something with you. Testimonies, the early part of Testimonies Volume 5, pages 45 to 62 and then 62 to 84, we have some interesting material here. But I want to focus particularly on some material that came from Testimonies to the Battle Creek Church. There are those who point to the fact that in Testimonies Volume 5, Uriah Smith's name was removed. Well, we already read why Mrs. White would remove personal information. Isn't that right? Some would say, well, Uriah Smith deserved having his name in there. Well, you might think so. I'm so glad we serve a God who is merciful. Aren't you? And here's a good point. Go back and review the changes between Testimonies to the Battle Creek Church and what you find in Volume 5. You'll find something interesting. The only complimentary thing stated about Uriah Smith was removed. Did you catch that? If Uriah Smith was tampering with Volume 5 to protect himself, why did he remove the only complimentary thing Mrs. White said about him? Furthermore, do you know that there's an addition that adds even more of an implication against Uriah Smith? Why would Uriah Smith do that? And I know some people point to the fact that there was a section called The Testimonies Rejected. And the title in Volume 5 was changed to The Testimonies Slighted. Have any of you heard this argument? Has anyone looked in a dictionary to see what the word slight means? I did. I got a hold of a really good dictionary, one of those big fat ones. This is the Webster's Third New International Dictionary, copyright 1971. Are you ready for this? What does it mean to slight? Now remember, there are those who are saying the title was The Testimonies Rejected. Now it's The Testimonies Slighted. Listen to this. Slight, what's it mean, according to Webster's? To make smooth or level, to level with the earth, to overthrow, raise, throw heedlessly or contemptuously. Do you know what the word raise means, by the way? R-A-Z-E. To overthrow from the foundations, lay level with the ground. Friend, when the language was changed from testimonies rejected to testimonies slighted, it was strengthened. It means to absolutely raise it to the ground, to, if it were possible, destroy it. All right. Evidence number three. We have proven that we don't need the testimonies changed to disobey them. Haven't we? Friends, we are rejecting and rebelling against counsel that is right in front of us. The Seventh-day Adventist Church's rebellion against the testimonies is the greatest proof of all that we don't need things changed to get around it. We have a million answers. That was for back then. Times have changed, right? Evidence number four. Evidence number four. This idea that these fraudulent changes were made by leaders and right under the nose of Mrs. White leads only to an attitude of suspicion of the brethren. And we have very clear instructions about suspicion. You know what's the difference between suspicion and reproof, by the way? There is a valid ministry of reproof, and that's to call sin by its right name and to speak out against error and heresy and false teaching, those things that are clear and plain. But when we begin to presume upon what, we can't prove it. We can't prove it, but I know somebody did. People have shown me their evidence that these changes were made. Oh, I've got a statement from Mrs. White that says it. Read it to me. I've heard these statements. They don't say that. Extrapolations are made. It's suspicion. Now, what does Mrs. White say about an attitude of suspicion? Gospel Workers, page 430. Let us put away all suspicion and hatred and all feelings of bitterness, even toward our worst enemies. Another one. Same page, Gospel Workers, page 430. Many are filled with self-importance and esteem themselves above their brethren. Such should let self die. Let the carnal mind be crucified. If you have enmity, suspicion, envy, and jealousy in your hearts, you have a work to do. Confess your sins. Come into harmony with your brethren. Speak well of them. Throw out no unfavorable hints, no suggestions that will awaken distrust in the minds of others. That's pretty heavy, isn't it? And friends, this idea that these fraudulent changes took place leads to that kind of suspicion which is being reproved here. All right, evidence number five. Evidence number five against fraudulent changes. It's simple. The survival of the Bible. How do people propose that the Bible could survive centuries and Mrs. White's writings couldn't even survive her own lifetime? And by the way, how did the Bible survive centuries without the guardianship of James White? I hope you're beginning to see something. If you buy into this lie about these fraudulent changes, the only logical conclusion is to reject the Bible. In fact, the only reason people who believe these things have not rejected the Bible is because they haven't carried the logic out. It's the only reason. Evidence number six, the testimony of the prophet herself. There are things that Mrs. White said that are so staggering that for us to entertain this idea that these fraudulent changes were made is an incredible denial of the gift of the spirit of prophecy. Let me read to you some of these statements. Look at this one. A letter to Elder J. N. Andrews in 1860. Manuscript releases, volume 6, page 333. If God reproves his people through an individual, he does not leave the one corrected to guess at matters and the message to become corrupted in reaching the person it is designed to correct. God gives the message and then takes a special care that it is not corrupted. That's pretty clear, isn't it, Fred? Do you want to question that? Do you want to raise doubt about those words from the prophet? Here's another one. This is Testimonies to Ministers, pages 465 and 466. What reserve power has the Lord with which to reach those who have cast aside his warnings and reproofs and have accredited the testimonies of the Spirit of God to no higher source than human wisdom? In the judgment, what can you who have done this offer to God as an excuse for turning from the evidences he has given you that God was in the work? Very heavy. Here's another one. There are some who think they are able to measure the character and to estimate the importance of the work the Lord has given me to do. Their own mind and judgment is the standard by which they would weigh the testimonies. My instructor said to me, "Tell these men that God has not committed to them the work of measuring, classifying, and defining the character of the testimonies. Those who attempt this are sure to err in their conclusions." Did you notice that? They are sure to err, friend. Do we want to venture on that ground? The Lord would have men adhere to their appointed work. If they will keep the way of the Lord, they will be able to discern clearly that the work which he has appointed me to do is not a work of human devising. Selected Messages, Volume 1, page 49. Here's another one. There are those who say someone manipulates her writing, her writings. I acknowledge the charge. It is one who is mighty in counsel, one who presents before me the condition of things. Letter 52, 1906. All right. Evidence number 7. What we would lose. I'm not going to give you a complete list, but let me name some books that we lose if this attack against the spirit of prophecy were true. Patriarchs and Prophets, Prophets and Kings, The Desire of Ages, Acts of the Apostles, The Great Controversy, 1911 edition. All of the testimony volumes, friends, volumes 1 through 9. Do we want to lose that? Here's some more books that we would lose. Christ Object Lessons, Christian Education, Counsels to Parents, Teachers, and Students, Early Writings, Education, Healthful Living, The Ministry of Healing. Now, we could look at a lot of statements that would go to just bring the point home. I just want to read a sampling of three statements. Three statements, friends, that go if this idea is true. This is heavy. These are statements that I believe the Lord sent our way for just such a time as this. And the devil hates this counsel, and he doesn't want people to be advised and to be enlightened. And so he raises an attack like this. Look at this first one. Just an example. Selected Messages, Volume 2, page 36. The things you have described as taking place in Indiana, the Lord has shown me would take place just before the close of probation. Oh, how the devil wants us to sleep right through it. And this would go, friend. Let's read it. What is it? What is this warning? Something that would happen just before the close of probation. I'm reading on. Every uncouth thing will be demonstrated. There will be shouting with drums, music, and dancing. Have we not seen it happen in our day? The senses of rational beings will become so confused that they cannot be trusted to make right decisions. And this is called the moving of the Holy Spirit. Let me give you another example. I'm only giving you three examples. There's many more we could turn to, but here's another example. What would we lose if we believed this lie? Here's one. On one occasion, when in New York City, I was in the night season called upon to behold buildings rising story after story toward heaven. These buildings were warranted to be fireproof, and they were erected to glorify the owners and builders. Higher and still higher these buildings rose, and in them the most costly material was used. Those to whom these buildings belonged were not asking themselves, how can we best glorify God? The Lord was not in their thoughts. The scene that next passed before my mind, I'm dropping down now a few lines, the scene that next passed before me was an alarm of fire. Men looked at the lofty and supposedly fireproof buildings and said, they're perfectly safe, but these buildings were consumed as if made of pitch. The fire engines could do nothing to stay the destruction. The firemen were unable to operate the engines. Now here's what's amazing about this statement. Friend, we saw this played out before our very eyes in New York City on 9/11. Do you know where this section begins? It's in Testimonies, Volume 9. It begins on page 11. I've got a question. These fraudulent leaders who supposedly make these changes, how did they pull this one off? They got the prophecy about 9/11 in Testimonies, Volume 9, starting on page 11. Friends, this is preposterous. It's ridiculous. This is a message from the Lord, friend. How can we believe these lies and let go of precious counsel from God? But I'm going to show you one. This might shock you. You want to know what goes? What goes if we believe this lie? Let me read it to you. The very last deception of Satan will be to make of none effect the testimony of the Spirit of God. Who's behind this? Something that would cause us to throw out the very warning against the very deception we're talking about. The very last deception of Satan will be to make of none effect the testimony of the Spirit of God. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Satan will work ingeniously in different ways and through different agencies to unsettle the confidence of God's remnant people in the true testimony. Selected Messages, Volume 1, page 48.